Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guests to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
Hey, I'm so glad you're back, and you can't wait to hear who's with us. Thank you so much, best podcast audience ever. You're sharing, you're asking, you're talking, and that's why we have Angela McKenna on with us today. I can't wait to get in. We have seen the book market just change directions in so many different ways. It has grown as an industry. It is captivating. There's the most incredible authors, but those authors need people to not only support them, but to help them do it right, right? There's nothing more incredible than seeing your work up on a screen or in a book or on a stage. And really, authors, this show is for you. You want to be an author? This show is for you. You are a book lover and supporter of authors? This show is for you. We're so excited. Like I said, Angela is here from Alera, and I am happy to introduce you and so glad. I know that you've just come off a whirlwind of a tour. And so we're so happy that you're with us today, Angela. Say hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh my goodness. I know. It's so lovely. So look, I'm going to get right into this because this is a hot topic. I know, and you know, because you're unpacking and you're packing suitcases and we're doing the same. And I think the most beautiful thing that I love about this whole surge of authorship, I call it, is the sense of empowerment and people owning their stories and sharing those stories and really leaving legacy. I don't think people realize how legacy-based authoring really is. It's that one diary you do want your family to read. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. Everybody has a story, and you just have to tell it effectively so that you will find your tribe, you will find your readership, and they will lean in, and your legacy will live on. I kind of call it to like the 23andMe, or what, 23andMe.
Yeah.
You've got your history, but you're actually writing it. So it's actually really exciting. And I remember my dad saying to me, I'm not letting you write your story. I'm writing my story. He says, you'll miss
it. Hey, dad. Oh, my goodness. And it's really grown and expanded. So look, there's lots of things that we've talked pre-show, and obviously we've had a conversation before this. And tell us about this invisible thing. I found that very interesting, and I think so will our audience today.
I call Omera's movement, it's called the Indie Doesn't Mean Invisible. I'm pushing it back against every outdated assumption that if you don't have a New York publishing house backing you, you don't belong in the room. And that is simply not true anymore. Independence today means ownership. It means control over your intellectual property. It means control over your timelines, your positioning. And what many authors misunderstand about this independence is that it does not remove the responsibility of building credibility. If anything, it actually increases that responsibility. Visibility is not automatic. It is something that really must be structured. And so I'm finding that this is something that really strong writers struggle with, because they believe if they have good writing, that's good enough. But in today's world, it is not. Craft is the foundation. It's about the positioning that makes your craft discoverable. And the market is super saturated. Attention is fragmented. We've got so many different platforms like TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, wherever your genre's audience is, that is where you need to be. And it's so fragmented because you have 7 seconds basically to capture people's attention, right? And if you don't understand how that perception works, how authority is built and how credibility is compounded, your work will disappear no matter how brilliant your work is.
And thank you for bringing that up, because, you know, when people think about authorship, I believe it's because they put so much into it. They're like, how can it not be on its own without the light being shone on it? How could it not rise? The interesting thing that we know from authors, I mean, look at, we have stages. There's people that write scripts. Think of it as the best movie ever written. If it wasn't advertised, I mean, remember when they used to put movies in the paper and then you went and found movies online, and, you know, now you see movies advertising movies. That's what a trailer is. You go to a movie, they're literally, you're paying to sit there and watch advertising of other movies. But there's something really personal that when an author puts into a book, because it's their soul, because it's their story, because it's what they've always wanted to do. I think what's happening is the fantasy of that this book is going to float to the top and stay at the top. The realization that it takes work to stay at the top is that people are realizing that that's something that they need to have conversations with while they're writing their book. People are like, well, I'm going to wait till marketing, till my book's done. I'm like, that's probably not a smart decision. And Angela, I'd love to hear what you have to say on that. I can see you shaking your head. It's like, as soon as you decide to go pen to paper, let's talk about how this is going to get to market, right?
Absolutely. Because there are three different segments of marketing for a book. There's your pre, there's your launch, and then there's your post. And what separates the serious authors from the hobbyists is that discipline. Serious authors treat their book as an asset, not as a passionate project. And there are different stages that you have to engage in. And I find that the hobbyists, I just call it spraying and praying. You cannot do that. Everything has to be very strategic. And you have to invest in the professional editing, the design, the distribution, the media, the long-term branding architecture. You actually become the brand. Your book is an adjunct. And so you actually have to start with building your own personal presence. And once you have got a very crafted book cover, this is the only industry where you judge a book by its cover. Your book needs to tell everything.
Well said.
So you have to build that infrastructure to become a trusted brand. And that is how independent authors can actually stand toe-to-toe, shoulder-to-shoulder with publishing peers, because it's not by copying them, it's by matching them. And I find that when you take it that seriously, what you are doing is you actually exceed the standards. And we don't need the gatekeepers anymore. You just need a quality strategy, a sustained presence where those three align. And the independence then comes an advantage rather than a limitation.
Wow. So we were having a chat and we were talking about vanity publishing. Now, that's a word I haven't heard for a while. And you're like, because you had to do some breakthrough around that. Can you explain? That's probably a term that many authors have not heard. Vanity publishing, traditional publishing, they hear. Can you explain that a little bit? Because you had to break through that.
Yes. So I started in 2005, my own literary agency, when I lived out in British Columbia. And that was a time when it was only the only way that you could get your book out there was through a traditional publisher. And if you even tried to publish independently, publish yourself, it was considered vanity publishing. Even though you have this amazing concept, you have to remember that traditional publishing is a commercial business. They are looking to sell a book. Publishing is an art form, from book cover to the words on the page to the artistry inside. It is a very commercial business. And so they are looking for things that can sell. And if you don't have the influence, you're not invited. If you don't have something that is trending today, you're not invited. You have to have something really, really substantial. And so when I first started, although I did have my degree in molecular biology and genetics and chemical environmental engineering, I realized that I'm a talkative person, and I do not like talking to petri dishes, amoebas, and cells. It just doesn't work.
Honestly, I got to say, I'm pretty sure you're out of the hundreds of interviews that we've done on this show. Pretty sure that's the only that you're the only person that said that.
So I changed directions. I totally changed directions, and I started studying at the Institute of Children's Literature, and I learned to write for middle grade children. I absolutely love that. It's probably the most it's the happiest times of my childhood between the ages of 7 and 12. It's your growing spurt. You're inventing yourself. And so for me, I can step into that and write no problem. And so when I was learning to write for children of the middle grade, my instructor said to me, or my professor said to me, this is your breakthrough book. You have got to start marketing this to publishers. And I thought, how do I do that? Because I can't do it. I have to find an agent. And an agent is just the same as a publisher. It's very, very difficult. So I decided to I opened my own literary agency, and I called myself Ashley Rose, and I marketed myself to publishers. And my dad was actually doing his memoirs at the time, so I was marketing him and myself. And so that was considered vanity publishing because I was doing it myself. But I did make a breakthrough. I got through to Bloomsbury for my dad, and I got through to Penguin for myself. And with Bloomsbury, they said to my dad, these memoirs are so good, you need to turn them into a series. You need to break them up. And for me, they said, you have to change these things around. And I went through the developmental edit, the copy edit, stylistic edit, and now and proofreading. And now you're telling me I need to change that all around to suit yourself. I'm like, nah, I'm not sure that I can do that. So my dad and I decided that we were going to write together. We were going to take my breakthrough, turn that into a series where we could incorporate his memoirs, his antics when he was a child, because it was hilarious. And we would start the series, The Chronicles of Burning Candles. But then, unfortunately, I broke up with my boyfriend and I moved back to Ontario, where I had to kind of reinvent myself and start again. And even though I was writing, I got into sales and marketing, and I did that for nearly 15 years, and I became really, really good at it, and made a substantial amount of money that when COVID happened, I said, I'm breaking away from corporate. I said, if I can market and do sales for other companies, I can do that for myself, and I can do it for other people, because I know how hard it is as a creative person not to be able to do that. So, so I started Omera Press. And I started the Case of Stolen Dreams. And doing that, I realized that not only do you have to get out there and self-publish, you have to find your accolades. You have to look for awards. You have to look for ways to bring yourself onto television or into a speaking engagement, a panel, a podcast like we're doing right now, to get yourself known. And once I published A Case of Stolen Dreams, I earned international recognition by winning the International Impact Award for Science Fiction for Children. Very respected. Thank you. Very, very proud of that. because I didn't simply write for the emotional landscape, and I didn't down talk to them. Getting readers, young readers, to trust how you're thinking, because a lot of people get preachy. This was actually getting them to, children are very incredibly perceptive. They know when something is diluted. And so I approached this the same way, the same serious way that I would an adult novel, the structure, the tension, the complexity. But I framed it in a way that middle graders would feel safe in entering. And I think that reflected in the reward. So I was very happy with that.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Wow. I love the moment of I can do it for myself. And I also love the full circle story, right? So many times we think, oh, we missed it, or we didn't do it. Or, I mean, and you know, you could be philosophical about it and go, it wasn't meant to be at that time. Maybe, you know, it was maybe, it doesn't really matter. The thing is, there's not just one chance, you know? I think, you know, we get concerned about not getting it all in. You know, we get concerned about not getting it all in. And there's time. You can breathe. You can put things on your list. You can set them aside. There is something very beautiful about coming back to something that keeps knocking on your door.
I totally agree with you. And you see this a lot in the business world where they say, it doesn't matter when you start, just start. Mm-hmm. Because that is when it was meant to be. And if you don't risk, you don't take, you don't get, right? So whether you start at the age of 50 or you start at the age of 15, it doesn't matter. Just start. And you will usually find your pathway, because if you really, really want it, you will find a way to make it happen.
Now, that is true, my friend. That is true. So look, you have this incredible story about that book. Let's hear about this new one. You've got a new book coming. Tell us about that.
Thank you. Yeah, you know what? I'm actually really excited about this, because this actually comes from my experience with a lot of the authors that I help on my platform. And I call this the trifecta presence model, which is based on a lot of patterns that I've observed. I kept seeing very talented authors either over-index on their visibility or underplaying it entirely. And they were either chasing algorithms or hiding behind their craft, and neither approach builds longevity. And so the model that I explain is that sustainable authority requires three aligned types of presence. That is your credibility presence, your organic presence, and then your in-person presence. And when all three of these move together, momentum compounds instead of just scattering. And so visibility alone isn't enough, because visibility without structure, it just evaporates. Mm-hmm. And you can go viral and still not be trusted. You can have a large following and no conversation. So perceived presence is just the first layer, where it's the signal credibility at a glance. This is for your media. This is for your bookstores that will allow your book into their store. It's for the awards. It's the stage appearances and that strategic partnership. Because when you have your website, when you've got yourself on the different social media platforms, that's starting to build your presence. And when people start seeing that presence, other people lean in. It's low risk for them, right? Mm-hmm. So then you have your organic presence, which is that deeper, steady growth, those meaningful conversations that you have with people online that get your thought leadership going. It's your repeat readers, and then they give you the referrals. And that's where the revenue and loyalty is built, in that organic presence. And then your in-person presence, that is the most powerful layer. That's those speaking engagements, the book tours, the conversations in the real rooms, and that's where you lock it in. Mm-hmm. And each one supports the other, right? You remove one, the structure weakens. And so balancing this credibility without momentum burns you out. And it comes down to sequencing and intention. Not everything needs to be done all at the same time. Authors burn out when they chase that attention without anchoring that purpose. And so when you understand which layer that you're building at any given time, whether that's, like I said, the perception, the organic, or the in-person authority, you move strategically instead of reactively. And that is the goal. It isn't to have that constant activity. It's to align your presences.
Wow. And that's what this whole book is about. That's incredible. So the third that you talked about, I think I heard you mention book tour. Now, I know that you've just, I don't even know if you're unpacked, because you got in from a book tour yesterday. I'd love for you to share, because there's people that are authoring, there's people that are wanting to author, and we're sitting here, say, nailing some of that information down and knowing what your marketing plan before you launch is a good idea. We hear the word book launch and book tour. And yep. So many people I see do them very differently. I mean, conceptually, you have a book and you're doing some kind of event. Can you share with us what maybe you just came from? I mean, I know you're very excited about, I will let you introduce the person that you were taking around, but also giving our audience some ideas on different types of book tours.
Yep.
That would be really, I think, insightful.
Absolutely. I just came off a really great book tour, and I have to tell you from start to finish, because every bit of this really matters. I met Dr. Schiffer when I was at the London Book Tour last year. in London. And it was a 3-day, it was, I had a booth. It was a 3-day event. And he came to me for 3 days. He chatted with me for 3 days. And this guy here, he is an idol in the science world. He has, he won best doctor in neurology and psychiatry. He was the only doctor at one point who won best doctor for both of those fields. He was a Marine infantry. He served his country. He co-founded the American Neuropsychology Association, and he has done so much in the science world. And he comes to me with this beautiful literary piece. I'm just going to show you right now. He has 5 textbooks, but when he started, we actually had to start him from scratch. He had no social presence. He had no standards in the literary world. He had so many accolades, yet we had to start him from ground zero in literature. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't translate. Just because you are a god in one field, you have to start from the bottom and work your way up just like everyone else. And so working with Dr. Schiffer's project, it actually requires something that was very specific. It required restraint, it required precision and strategic elevation, especially because the title of his book is Bedtime Stories That Will Terrify Children.
Yeah, there you go. First book out of the hop, and you're going to be, you're going to be like, what's that about? I mean, that could literally be a scary story. That literally can be like the title of Friday the 13th or whatever it is, you know?
Right? It is not a commercial horror by any stretch. The subtitle is called 8 Tales to Help Parents and Children Navigate Through Fear. So there is foundation there. And it is a literary psychology sitting in the adult literary genre, which is one of the most hardest genres to break into, which meant, the 8 stories in this is meant to be read to children, kind of like Grimm's fairy tales. And so it kind of sits in this very uncomfortable space between neurology, parenting, philosophy. And storytelling. And so that kind of work cannot be marketed with gimmicks. It must be positioned with discipline. And so we had to start before when we were doing the developmental edit on it. We got this great book cover. And so we started marketing it at that point, because when I did the focus group I do a focus group for everything just to make sure it's marketable. And that's actually something that everybody should do. Just saying, 50%, I had 278 people in on this focus group. 50% said, "Oh my God, that is a freaking amazing title. I love the punch. This is awesome. It totally grabs me." And then I had other people like, "I would never buy that book for my child. Never. I would." Like, okay, well, let's see what we do here. So the first step is clarity. You have to define what exactly the book was. Mm-hmm. And just as importantly, define what it is not. It is a provocative title that can be easily misread. So instead of softening it, what we did was we anchored it around proximity, emotional scaffolding, and shared fear. So we reframed this terrify as psychology courage rather than just a spectacle. And that reframing changed everything. We were able to get into bookstores. We were able to get in. So these are things that you want to get into as a, you need a media kit. Just make yourself a media kit. Write down everything that you've done, all the things that you've done along the way that help you stand out as an author, whether it's marketing and or whether it's your writing capabilities. Maybe you've written for a journal or something like that. Make sure you get a media kit, a 1-pager, 2-pager, something along those lines. Make sure that you have that. But once you have that, you can actually start marketing your book, and have your cover. With him, we wanted panels because we needed experts to ensure that the grounding that we are talking about here is valid. So we not only had a book tour, we also had him Here's another thing. I'm going to go back to the vanity publishing, because when I was at the London Book Tour too, there was one fellow came up to me and he had a children's fantasy book. A vanity publisher just did a proofread, didn't do take him through the editing, full editing process. So I could tell within the first three chapters that I read that the book had not done any of that. It wasn't grounding. It was all over the place. They had just done a proofreading. The cover was blah. And on top of that, where they took him, he said he spent $14,000 on having his children's book placed on a billboard in Las Vegas. Las Vegas. What is it?
Wow. Yeah. Those two things don't go together. That's one thing.
Totally different. And on top of that, they put his, so they said, we'll get you on a podcast. They got him on a sporting podcast. There was nothing sportive about his book. There was nothing aligning there. He says, I got no sales. Well, it's no wonder you had your platform showing in the wrong place. And you're talking in areas that aren't even fitting your genre. And those things are so important. And so what we did was for Dr. Schiffer, we got his credibility layering. We got him, we built him a beautiful website. We got him different social media. We went from, again, adult literature is one of the hardest to break into, that the traditional back ring. So the building up of the perceived presence had to be intentional. It was strategic media placement. We had him on the billboard in Times Square. We had his signing of his book in one of the biggest outlets, Barnes & Noble on Fifth Avenue in New York. We curated these conversations. We had cultural signals. We had aligned panelists. Every appearance had to reinforce the seriousness of his topic. Nothing could be performative. It couldn't feel performative. New York, the bibliothèque, it's a standard, it's a staple in the adult literature world. So that was where we launched it. So when you're doing your launches, make sure that it aligns with the genre that you are signaling your book to be in. We had a room of experts. The tone, all of it signaled intellectual depth. And so simultaneously, we used Bookster. Bookster is one of the biggest literary platforms out there with 1.6 million followers. So we used that to build his organic presence. So his social media went from zero. In 4 months, we have 2,740 plus followers now for him, because we used philosophical clarity. Mm-hmm. We led with his voice, we led with his ideas, and we totally resisted that trend chasing. We just chose steadiness over the spectacle. And so his following is clinicians, parents, librarians, thought leaders in this industry. And then finally, with his in-person presence, we used the real rooms, real conversations. We use proximity and Dr. Schiffer's personal story. Your personal story matters. Always ensure you weave that in, because Dr. Schiffer's personal stories break my heart. They come from, he told these eight stories to his child, his son, when he was 3 years old, when he had leukemia and he was going through the leukemia treatment and medication in a time where the mortality was 50-50.
Yeah.
So these stories grounded his child. They gave him stability. It gave him courage. It helped him overcome the fear of death not just death. There was companionship, relationships, the foundation of family, and all of these things are incorporated into the book. And wow. It was phenomenal. But not even just that, even from an adult point of view, when I first read his stories, it reminded me of the stories that my dad told me when I was a child and my sisters. And it not only did my dad have fear, it had a just ending. Sometimes it had a happy ending. Sometimes it was just a just ending. But it actually reminds me of some of the fears and anxieties that I still have today and why I have them. One thing I have is my dad used to tell this story of this alligator that lived under our bed. And to this day, I still wrap myself up like a burrito at night. And if one of my extremity goes out, I keep thinking, there's something going to nibble from under. So it gives a lot of clarity to children and adults. And so these stories are meant to be read in proximity, the adult being the anchor, so that the child doesn't, in this world where we have so much horrible things going on, it allows children to not be sheltered from fear, but to attack it, to equip themselves with fear at an early age so that they can manage themselves better when they're older. And so all three of those made the success of the tour.
Yeah.
Everything aligned together. And at this present time, we have so many different podcasts wanting to have him on. We have other book signing tours that we are going to be going on. We have different TV programs of which we're getting him set up on. So these are things that you need to do and have aligned in order for you to have a successful book. It's not just spraying and praying. Everything needs to be strategic.
I love that. There's so much in there that I'm sure people are going to be listening to this over and over again so that they can write it down, because it's very encompassing. I think it's very encompassing and interesting that you tell a story from someone who even had accolades in another sector, had to rebuild that. I'm sure that it didn't hurt to have accolades, just like it doesn't hurt to have passion and go all in. Magic happens, right? Even if you don't have .. or even if you have 10,000 followers and it's not cracking for you, magic is still there. But I think there's something about due diligence that puts magic in your favor, right? It opens doors that you wouldn't have doors opened. It puts you on shows that you may not have that exposure to, millions or hundreds of millions or hundreds of thousands or thousands, wherever you're at, right? So I love that there's a thought process, but it is thought and it is methodical and it is meant to go from one to another to another to launch. Don't be afraid to launch. I'm just like, don't be afraid to launch. There's things to learn, but saying that you're an author and owning your story is pretty beautiful. But as you have services to help people, that's, you know, highly recommended, which is why we've had Angela on the show today.
I always say no question is a silly question if you don't know. And so navigating the publishing industry, it's such a changing landscape.
Of course.
I'm always here for questions. I'm always here to help in any way I possibly can, because we all have to start somewhere. And I believe in paying it forward. If you need the assistance, all you have to do is ask, and don't ever sit in that place of unknown. People are always out there to help. Same with you and how you're helping authors as well. You're helping them build their presence, getting their stories told, taking them to the different avenues that are strategic to help them get their books out there and get their story told.
Yeah, and I think it's fantastic. So we know that we are in a world of collaboration. This is a perfect example of what that looks like, where you have a skill, someone else has a skill, you have a need for their client. What they do can help your client. Those conversations and collaborations are so critical, I think, to be able to encompass the entrepreneur, the author, the stage right, the playwright, whatever, right? The fashion designer, the entrepreneur, the entrepreneur, those of us that can't say no, you know, to be able to do things, whether it's quicker, faster, easier, but I think mostly that the return of investment comes quicker. I also think that the stabilizing of energy that has to go out into the, I don't know what to do, that can be debilitating right there. I think the fact that it debilitates people when they don't know what to do. And I think that it's really important for people to understand that you're not supposed to. Yeah. Like, you're just not supposed to. Like, people go, I don't know how to do a TV show. I go, good. I don't like it. I mean, like, what else? You know, so what? There's a lot of things that you don't know, but not letting it stop you, because there's so many people like yourself that have niched themselves to be experts and grounded in what another person actually needs. So it's not the... No longer can that be a reason not to play.
No, exactly. No person is an island. We all move forward when people push us forward.
Yeah.
And Like I said, no question is a bad question, a silly question. You don't know what you don't know. And the only thing silly is not getting the help.
All right. So look, I'm going to ask you a completely different question. They know to reach out to you. Of course, everything's in the show notes. Angelus is not going to be the first time that we're hanging out doing things together. I'm sure our community will see us in multitudes of different ways. And I love that. Thank you for explaining what you did about his book tour and also what it is that you did to break your ground and stand your ground, really. But I'm going to ask you a completely different thing. We know now what you do for your business, but on the inside, so we talk a lot about top performance and mission accepted, and we talk a lot about how to be able to maximize, because that's basic. Most of the entrepreneurs that are listening to this show, many times they are either working within a small team or they have something going on, they want to build in something else. And one of the questions I'm sure you get asked often, I want to ask you this, because people are like, oh my gosh, Angela, how do you do it? Like, how do you do it? Like, how do you do it? What is some of your inside strategies for you to be able to run a successful business? We call them top performance, whether you'll call it top performance tips or hacks, or what is it that you do so that you can have a good life? I don't want to say balanced life, because when you're creative, what's balance? But what's something that you do to help keep your head above water and moving yourself forward?
That's actually a really good question.
Isn't it? Let's go on camera and have that glass of wine.
Right? So I would have to say that I start knowing a little bit about everything, but I know where I am grounded. I know what I'm good at, and I farm out what I'm not. So I don't pretend to be good at everything, because I know where my niche is, and that's where I hang out. I get people to help me with the places that I know I can do, but I don't want to do, because you also need to have your own personal space. You need to have nothing is ever truly balanced, but you do need to find some balance. And what I do is I help people. I have my area of marketing niche that I'm really good at. I farm out all the rest, and I make sure that I take 1 hour every day to write for me.
Ooh, and did you hear that, people? All right. That's awesome.
Because I have to practice what I preach. And so I have to find time to do that. And if I'm not writing, well, then I'm not practicing what I preach. And I actually do go out there and I do my own book tours. And I find different ways to, you have to think outside the box too. You have to find different ways. Like for my book, and I'm just going to promote this right here, right now.
Yeah.
Yes. And this one too.
Right.
That one's called "Oh No, It's Not: How a Nostril Goes Viral," and that's where I use my my molecular biology degree,
nice.
Teaching the kids how to learn about the body inside out in a fun way. But what I did was, for one of my book tours, I asked them to help me write my third book, because I thought I want literature to start at an early age. I want writing to start at an early age. And I wanted them to start thinking about it as an early age. You wouldn't believe the amount of imagination that came back at me. And my third book is going to be exceptional. So look for different ways to hone your craft.
Very good. Thank you so much. You just gave us a plethora. Some people say plethora, some say plethora. I should ask you, it depends who you talk to, and some people in different countries say it differently, but that's how I say it. And you've given us a lot to think about. And for those I'm thrilled, you know,
thanks.
For those that are embarking on this, I'm thrilled. I just think that, wow, what a powerful session that we had today. What a powerful podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. I am going to just talk to the audience a little bit and thank you, because I'm going to pre-thank you, because I know you're going to send this out. There's nothing more, you know, lovely than getting, you know, a message. Reach out to Angela on her social media and give her some feedback on what you thought. Ask questions. It's really important, I think, as we share on podcasts and share our craft and share our gifts, to be able to know that it's made an impact. So thank you for being with us today. And audience, if you want to be sitting where Angela is, if you've got a passion and you've got a project and there's something that you want to talk about and share about, This is not difficult. You know where to watch the show. You can put us anywhere. Put the name of the title of the show and Angela's name, and you can watch it pop up. Head over to devdrummond.com. It's an easy place for you. Just go to the podcasts. You'll find this show there, and it'll be lovely, and enjoy it, and let us know what you think. Thank you for being with us today. And audience, as always, you be well, and you stay groovy. Bye for now.
Bye.